Hello and welcome to On the Corner, the official podcast of PitchThis.com. I'm your host, Eric Smolski, joined, as always, we've got our winter looks going on. Nick's hair is a little long. My beard's
Oh, God, I was hoping you wouldn't notice. It is terrible. I need to get this haircut now.
It's winter chic. New York City winter chic. How are you doing?
Right. I'm doing great, and I'm getting back into the groove of this. We have PitchCon coming in a week and a half. That is going to start on January 30th. If you don't know that, it is a fundraiser to LAS to combat it. We aim to raise $10,000. We raised $15,000 last year. And all of it goes to charity. We don't take anything here at Pitcherless. It's a four-day baseball conference. It's 44 hours free. Just come and watch your favorite people in the industry talk about baseball from Thursday to Sunday. And there's no football on Sunday, so you got no excuse. It's going to be great.
Yeah, no excuses. Got to be there for a great cause. Should be fun. I don't know what I'm doing yet as part of it, but I'll be doing something. Yep. So I'm excited. Nick and I decided we're going to do a little fun, like custom leaderboard today. So last episode, if you didn't go back and listen to that, we kind of did some this and that player pairings where we talked through, you know, the stats that we look at or how we evaluate pitchers when we're looking at just like, you know, the data and how we could determine which pitchers we prefer. Today, we decided it'd be fun to look at some of the stats that we think are kind of like most useful in highlighting pitchers who are, you know, have the potential for fantasy success. And then the lovely, generous, kind-hearted Kyle Bland created a leaderboard for us where he took the averages of these stats. The stats that Nick and I chose were swinging strike rate, striker, which is a PLV stat Nick will talk about in a second, and PLV, which is obviously another pitcher list stat that Nick will chat about. And Kyle basically found the league average of all pitchers that had thrown at least 1,500 pitches. And then we have leaderboards of the pitchers who were top 10 percentile in all of those stats, top 20%, top 30, et cetera, to kind of try to narrow down the pitchers who really do the things that we like the most and really do them well. So the league average swinging strike rate was 11.6%. The league average striker was 51.2% and PLV was 5.01. So those are like the averages and we're shooting for guys above that. But Nick, really quick, just explain to people before we get into the pitchers, what is striker? how does PLV get calculated and why do we feel like those stats were worthy of being on?
Yeah, so I mean, PLV is your stuff plus kind of thing, except we do it a little bit differently. We have our own separate model for that, but we also have it for location in one. So in some ways, it's like pitching plus, but it essentially says based on location, the context of that pitch in case of for strike and batter handedness. Sorry, for count and batter handedness, we are saying was this a good pitch or a bad pitch? And if you know that 5.0 is the average. And that's getting close to 5.5 is elite. It's really between like 4.5 and 5.5, if you think of it like that. It's a really good way to just say, cool, all encompassing, you execute pitches that we think should be of benefit to you or should harm you. And striker is a really interesting concept that I think actually tells a great story of, do you throw strikes? But more importantly, do you throw effective strikes? Mm-hmm. Because just throwing strikes isn't inherently the best thing because those strikes could be in play and hurting you. And if you throw a lot of strikes, fine, you throw 10 of them in a row, but then all of a sudden it's a home run the next one, then that's not good. That hurts you. And if you didn't throw the strikes like Blake Snell, for example, that don't harm you, then wait, hold on a second. It might be better to throw fewer strikes. So we want to have that balance of strikes and contact that is beneficial or harmful to you. So we created a formula, strike minus ICR rate. And ICR rate, if you guys heard me quote it a lot, is about the contact allowed by the hitter. And it's ideal contact rate. So we take not just barrels, but it's also solid hit rate, flares and burners as well inside of that. These are the things that are known to be beneficial to batters to get on base. And we say all of those are the ideal contact for a batter. So if you throw pitches and you have low ICR, that is very good. But sometimes you get that because they're out of the zone and they shouldn't be good contact because they're hard to hit. So if you get strikes with this pitch and you also induce weak contact, those are the best pitches in baseball. So having a good striker is generally a good showcase of, hey, look, I get strikes and I also limit hard contact. There is, bad contact for myself. There is also something we're developing, which I'm just giving a preview in case I'm going to say it, but I don't care. It's called stud rate. Strikes that utterly dominate. These are ones that are including striker, but also includes whiffs, saying that, look, not all strikes are created equal. We also want strikes that are just whiffing batters. And we actually are working out that formula exactly for how we want a good stud rate, because it's not all just about balls in play. But yeah, generally, striker is a great showcase of saying, are you effectively getting through a lineup?
Nice. And these are, and that's the reason all of these are on here. Great breakdown of that. Obviously, a lot of these you can be found on leaderboards as well, over on Pitcher List. So we're going to start. If I look at just the top 10%, so which pitchers were in the top 10% of in baseball in all three of these categories? There's only one pitcher, Nick. 100th percentile swinging strike rate, 98th percentile striker, 91st percentile PLV. It's Garrett Crochet.
He's the best.
Garrett Crochet.
He's the best.
People just did not. You had him third, I think, third or fourth for first pitch Arizona. People were very confused.
It was right there. Yeah. Right.
Why he was so high. Now he's that high, but now we also see him with the Red Sox. I mean, I feel like this guy is, locked in top five, and we've talked about that a lot so far in these episodes, so we don't really need to belabor the point, but I thought it was interesting that Crochet is the only starter that hit those marks.
Yeah. I mean, this is what Elite Extension does with great command of 97 and having a variety where it's a cutter that it's hard to read, that it's consistent. And the fact of the matter is that Garrett Crochet isn't just in a better situation now in Fenway. It's not ideal being in that park, but if you're so good, it doesn't matter. Wins should come more easily. He's not going to be limited as well. And I think you made actually a really good point about how the win trajectory for Garrett Crochet actually wasn't so bad in the first half before he started getting limited to just four innings a game. And of course, as we know, guys, the leash is gone from Garrett Crochet now. The White Sox did everything you could ever hope for when it comes to making Garrett Crochet ready to be a workhorse in 2025. I have so much temptation, and I might, honestly, I'm not even kidding, I might be making Garrett Crochet my SP number one when I put out my top 400, because now he's adding the sinker that I think is just absurd as well, with this whole mix of just, throw strikes and it's great. And there's, to me, less of a obvious way for it to go wrong with, say, Scooble or with Skeens, that Garrett Crochet just, like, these three pitches are just, they're just dumb. You just throw strikes with them and they can't hit them. And, like, when you do that, like, right, you don't need to be crafty like Scooble's changeup to make his four-seamer better, right? Be pinpoint with that slider. With Skeens, is he going to throw enough strikes? Is a slider good enough? Is it, those days when the fastball isn't there? Then Garrett Crochet is just there and just pumps them in, and it's like, bye. It just makes more sense in my head. So I might be doing that. I don't know. Either way, those are the top three. And yeah, Garrett Crochet is amazing, guys.
Boom. Yep. We've talked about it a bunch. Just reiterating that point here. If we move it down to pitchers who were in the top 20% in each of these three stats, we obviously get Crochet. We get a few names that don't surprise us. Zach Wheeler. Another guy seems pretty locked into the top four or five starters, however you want to shake it out. Tyler Glasnow, who we know, when he's on the mound, is always a pretty strong, upper, maybe top 10, 15 starter in baseball when he's healthy. So that's not surprising. And then the other two guys who don't surprise us, given how well they pitched last year, and obviously these are for last year's stats, are Blake Snell and Chris Sale. Two guys who we know had really strong years. Two guys who we know we have some concerns with in terms of Snell's health. And Snell, has some stretches where he is inconsistent. The numbers at the end have been good. But I wanted to highlight three guys who jump on here that I think are a bit more surprising. I'll start with one that's a top 20 guy for you, but I think some people still don't really think of him as like a really strong fantasy starter, and it's Bailey Ober. who's 94th percentile here, swinging strike rate, 94th percentile striker, and 89th percentile in terms of PLV. I just think that people write Ober off, and he seems to be a locked in top 20 guy. Maybe he should be higher based on this leaderboard.
Yeah, Billy Ober to me is getting too punished for a few bad games. And there's this idea that when Billy Ober is bad, oh, it's a 9-earned run game now. That's just what it is, Destin, because those two or three were just really bad this year. And I don't believe that. I think baseball is a very weird sport. I feel that when you have an off day, sometimes it becomes 3-earned runs or 4-earned runs. Sometimes it just becomes 9. And that's what happened on those days. Okay. But what he does is exceptional. Four-seamers location are actually, it was a little bit worse last year, but generally upstairs with elite extension, a changeup that's still one of the best right-handed changeups, believe it or not, in the game. And then you have a slider that's really a cutter, whichever way you want to call it, that really added to what he does. And he throws a ton of strikes. That extension with three pitches that all look like the fastball out of the hand make it really effective at keeping the ICR low. So I'm not surprised by this at all. And PLV certainly loves his changeup as well. So Billy Ober, not a shock here at all.
Yeah, not a shock. And I think it's just the narrative of like, oh, he's not a guy who throws really hard. And so, you know, he kind of came out of nowhere as a prospect too. It just seemed like he was a guy that people thought, keep thinking it's not going to stick in a certain way.
Right.
And this would suggest that the underlying stats back up the performance, right? His underlying metrics, back up the stats and the performance outside of those few, you know, rough games. Two young pitchers jumped on this list. One is a guy who we've been talking about for a lot of the offseason. Another guy who made his debut last year, jumped a few levels. Things were fine at the start, but not great. And then he kind of really turned things on a little bit. And it is Spencer Schwellenbach.
Yeah.
Spencer Schwellenbach is 88th percentile swinging strike rate, 97th percentile striker, and 93rd percentile PLV. I mean, you were big on Schwellenbach to begin with, and this kind of seems to back up. Like, I know people have some of their concerns, like we don't have a large sample size and he hasn't thrown a lot of innings and et cetera, et cetera. But this is in his rookie year, his debut season, which we know was, you know, it had ups and downs, or it got better as the year went on. So this isn't like his ceiling, and this not being his ceiling, and he's still one of only 8 pitchers who were top 20 percentile or 20% in all of these stats is pretty impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. So Spencer Schwellenbach is a guy who throws strikes. And when I see a guy come up from the minors who not only throws strikes, but then also has whiffable secondaries, that's kind of cool. You have a 96-mile-per-hour fastball as well. It is not a good shape one. It is not a four-seamer at 96, I think, is going to completely demolish a lot of batters, just a 10% swing strike rate overall last year. But every single one of these pitches is four-seamer, 72% strike rate, slider, 72, cutter, 74. You can even make an argument that he should throw fewer strikes here. 65% on the curve and 63 on the splitter and even 61 on the sinker, all of them above 60%. That is why you're going to have a high striker innately. But then the fact that the four seamer is the only one that carried an ICR above 36%, which means that these secondaries are not what batters are comfortable hitting whatsoever. And because he's throwing strikes with them, they're moving. It's really difficult as a hitter. You have to be aggressive. You have to go up to the plate ready to hit. Schwellenbach's walk rate was under 5% last year. I would expect that to continue. And under 8 hit per 9 because of that low ICR. That makes sense too. And if you're expecting some sort of aggression, I can understand it in the way of maybe of strikeouts, possibly, if they're able to hit the fastball a little bit more. Maybe he's not able to be as efficient with his secondaries and 2-strike counts. Fine. But it does seem like he's going to throw strikes. The walk rate's going to be low. Maybe the hit rate goes up because they're more ready for it. But with his vast arsenal, I think the ICR is going to stay down because they also have to match it at 96. A lot of the times that we see these low walk guys, they're at 92, 93. and they're able to attack the fastball better, be a little bit more patient, be ready for the secondaries. But because that'd be geared up 96, it gives them a lot less time. And it's not like it's bad extension either. It's closer to 7 than it is to 6, which means that it's not an advantage. It's not taking that 96 and going down to 94 or something like that. Mm-hmm. So what Spencer Schmellenbach does, to me, is set up a pitcher for fewer strikes if you wanted to, and continue to lean into that weak contact, while the four seamer could also take a small step back and not allow as much as balls in play as it did last year. So I love this. I feel that he has a lot to build upon, and a 3.35 ERA, 1.04 WHIP last year from Spencer Schmellenbach is not actually that ridiculous of a thing. 25% K rate. Yep. The only question, of course, is about his volume. Was it too much of a jump last year? Does that make him injury prone? That's what Jason Kladd has mentioned, and he's not bringing up a bad point. It's just something that I think I'm going to look past because there are injury concerns about nearly everyone, and yep. Schmellenbach is in such a good situation as a strike thrower. He's cool.
There was a great quote from the Ron Chandler, Baseball HQ, the forecaster, which is just like, with pitchers, it comes down to there's risky and there's riskier. And that's kind of the nature of like starting pitcher injuries. Like we've talked about this, all at length. Nobody is safe. So is Schmellenbach just risky, or is he riskier that you can make that call? But, at some point, you're going to draft a starting pitcher who's incredibly talented, but just a little bit risky because they're all a little bit risky.
Right.
And so I had Schmellenbach, when we did the initial rankings, I think I had him like 35, 36, something like that. And I'm going to need to recalibrate and adjust that as we get closer, because I think I was trying to be a little too cautious with how I ranked him.
Yeah, I think he's going to be great.
And then the last guy on this list who made top 20% in every single one actually has the highest PLV in your 2025 PLV update. That's Jared Jones.
Yeah.
95th percentile swinging strike rate, 83rd percentile striker, which is the lowest of any of the pitcher in this group, and then 97th percentile PLV. We had some questions about Jones. It wasn't a first year without some speed bumps, but this kind of suggests, I guess, what we have thought before, that like this is an incredibly talented pitcher. I know you and I are both fans of his anyway.
Right. Here's the thing. Until June 6th, the first 12 games of the year for Jared Jones, I mean, this is where you get everything that you're seeing in front of you, right? It's a 68 to 70% strike rate. It's a 38% ICR across everything. He's killing it. 28% K rate, only 5% walk rate, etc. The thing is, after that game, so starting on June 7th in his final 10 of the year, and really amplified when he came back from injury in the end of August, it was just a 64% strike rate with a 41% ICR. So that striker that you're seeing right now at 53% was a lot better earlier on the season, and then should not be on this list in the second half. And 5.33 ERA with a 1.43 WHIP in that time. PLV fell down to 5.24 as opposed to the 5.37 that was truly elite back then. There's that percentile really jumping up. 97th percentile is relative to a 5.31 PLV. So even better in the beginning of the year, right? And that's really the question, I think, with Jared Jones. As a guy with two pitches for the most part, four seamer and slider that really took the league by storm, both of them got a little bit worse. His command as well, he wasn't really fully recovered, I think, from that lat injury, and maybe rushed back, maybe wasn't back into form and in rhythm in the second half. So the question then remains, okay, what kind of Jones are we going to see now? And I'm a little hesitant because it is mostly two pitch with that four seamer that really was just so dominant early in the season, but he does need something else. He does need, I think, a cutter in there, a changeup, something to rock the boat, maybe even a sinker to go along with everything. Because what I do like about Jared Jones is that he's near 7 feet of extension. He's absurdly flat. 1.6 height adjusted VAA is ridiculous. 16 inches of vert to go with this 97 mile per hour fastball, right? He's got all the things to make this four seamer amazing, but he just needs to keep batters honest with something else too. Just a little bit more. So they can't just be there and ready and primed for that fast launch as much as possible. And that slider wasn't as reliable later on in the year to then be the big nullifier. So this should really highlight how good Jared Jones was in the first half, really the first 2.5 months of the year. And yes, it was very painful as a manager having him in September. He did not look like himself whatsoever. The question is, all right, are we going to get back to that the first 2 months or so? Is there a way for him to reclaim it? I think so, but it may be a little more frustrating as we move on.
Yeah, and the lat injury is a good point. And then there's just the you know, rookie pitching more innings than he has before, big jump in competition, those things. They're all things where, like, I try not to overreact to pitchers slowing in the second half in those situations. Again, we talked about this in the last episode. Am I going to treat Jared Jones like I treated Bobby Miller and Grayson Rodriguez going into last year, where I rank him at what I thought the ceiling was? I think I had Miller like SP15. No, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to treat Jared Jones as if, you know, I'm looking for his 75th percentile outcome. But this shows you that, like, on the baseline skills, if he does put it all together, it's the upside is pretty huge for Jared Jones.
Oh yeah, it's Spencer Strider.
Yes.
Like that's the ceiling that you're chasing here, is Spencer Strider.
We've got some more pitchers that when we expand this leaderboard here, and we'll get to those after this break. All right, so we've covered the pitchers who qualified. If we just look at pitchers who finished in the top 20% of each of these categories, again, the categories, the stats we looked at were swing and strike rate, striker, PLV. If I expand it to pitchers who finished in the top 25%, we got a few new names on here. Some guys who shouldn't really surprise us. Dylan Cease ends up on this list. Logan Gilbert now ends up on this list. And Joe Ryan ends up on this list. Of those three, you know, I think those are all guys who we understand have fantasy ace ability and have pitched like fantasy aces at times. I think you and I trust Gilbert the most of the group. We've ranked him highest, but, you know, big on Joe Ryan and big on Dylan Cease. So the fact that these guys are in here, you know, Dylan Cease, this is, again, a good year. We've seen good years and bad years. It was a good year. We know Dylan Cease having the ability of a top 15 starting pitcher isn't shocking. It's just there's a little risk in the consistency. Are you going to get that or not? But you're not surprised to see these three guys here, are you?
No. Joe Ryan throws strikes with a four-seamer, and he throws that. He throws it nearly 50% of the time with a strike rate well above 70%. We know it's a really hard pitch to hit. Yes, it is higher than you expect, 39% ICR, but given how much he throws it, it's just super efficient for him. While the other offerings he has, splitter and sweeper, they aren't actually major strike pitches, but they are good at preventing hard contact because they are out of the zone. Generally, guys are up there for the four-seamer, knowing they're going to get the four-seamer, and those are the nullifiers, the ways to keep guys honest. I would prefer Joe Ryan to have something else in there than the splitter or the sweeper. I don't really think they are that amazing. The sweeper has been effective, especially against right-handers. No surprise there, as it should be 21% usage against them, 19% swing strike rate, 62% strike rate, 35% ICR. But and then the lefties really do see more of the splitter, 33% usage there. And they both do fine, but they're not really exceptional. It's really about that four-seamer. And it's actually interesting to see that the lefties are having a tougher time against Joe Ryan's four-seamer than right-handers. And I think that has to do with the splitter being a little bit more difficult to handle with a 61% strike rate, right? So homers are the name of the game when it comes to Joe Ryan as well. That's been a major problem for him. Not a single season have we seen a home run per nine under 1.2 from him. And I think the biggest leap that we're waiting for is for Joe Ryan to have something else that's a little bit more reliable in the zone. You see the 77% swing strike rate percentile because it's just a four-seamer for the most part. He doesn't have that vicious slider of the other guys. The sweeper, yes, it had some success against right-handers, but not as much against lefties, and same thing for the splitter. He's so close. The good news is that he doesn't have bad whips, and I feel like, Eric, are you on my side of people underrating the value of a good whip. It was a 0.99 in 135 innings last year for Joe Ryan.
I also know that people, I don't know that people know what a good whip is. and I'm not saying that to insult people's intelligence. Sure. I'm just saying, like, I don't think that we talk enough about what a good whip is in the sense that, like, somebody could identify what one is. And I think also the numbers differ where, like, you know, if somebody has a 3.1 ERA or a 3.3 ERA, you're like, well, those are both really good ERAs. But if somebody has a straight one whip or a 1.2 whip, those are drastically different whips in a way that they're not drastically different ERAs. And so I think that we need a little bit more of a baseline on how to discuss whips, because I think that they get overlooked in the way that, like, runs kind of get overlooked if you're looking at offensive categories where people chase strikeouts and chase, you know, pitchers on good teams with high win totals. And we don't really, like, roster guys specifically for whip. We say ratios, right? We combine whip and ERA and ratios, not this guy's a good whip starter, something like that.
Yeah. And the thing is, too, you have other guys where they are home run suppressors. So they'll have, say, like a 3.25 ERA, but then it's a 1.20-1.25 whip because they don't allow home runs. And that means they allow more hits in general, but they work around them. They have a higher left on base rate because of that. And that's the flip side of it, right? You can have a 3.60 ERA and a 0.99 whip, or really I should say like the 3.55 ERA of Joe Ryan's 2022 and a 1.10 whip. But then you can also have like the Merrill Kelly is what I think of like a 3.10 ERA and a 1.25 whip. So it's important to understand that balance. I think it's easier to kind of come back in the ERA field than it is in the whip field, because whip, to have a dramatic change in whip is really difficult, I think, in season. But I could be very wrong about that one. I'm actually curious to hear other people's thoughts. But generally, walk rates are somewhat what they're going to be with the guys. Same thing with hit rates, but home runs will be a little bit more fluctuating. So you might be able to jump in ERA a little bit faster than whip. That's my reasoning there. But anyway, when it comes down to Joe Ryan, I'm going to be looking for that extra pitch. I'm not suggesting he can really take a massive leap, because it's been a struggle for him to find that extra pitch. Mm-hmm. And there's also, I should mention, the injury question that he left last year with. I think he's fine. Everything I've understood is that he's fine for next year, Joe Ryan. But I think that's why some might be a little bit less encouraged. But I think he's just a strong pitcher, 27% strikeout rate last year, 29% 2023. He gets a lot of strikes, low walk rate, 5%, 4%. It's just about, can you keep the ball in the park? And hopefully in his fourth full season, Joe Ryan's getting better at this.
Yeah, I was a big fan of the changes he made last year, and I bumped him up heading into the year. And so I think I'm going to have him in that same kind of like near the top 20 range for me. I think I had like 19th. The last time we did the rankings. Two more pitchers I wanted to discuss here. One is Shota Imanaga, who, we know came out of the gates really hot in the season. We know that, you know, there were some home run issues, which we kind of knew with the way that he keeps the fastball up in the zone when the weather got warmer in Chicago. But we have 97th percentile swinging strike rate. We have 89th percentile striker, 75th percentile PLV. Are you buying Imanaga in kind of like this top 20 range, or do you think maybe he hit on some things for us, but because of the homer to fly ball ratio and things like that, that, you know, we should bump him down a little bit?
Well, it's interesting. I'm still figuring out Imanaga. Is that a splitter that we can really rely on as much as we saw last year? I mean, it's really against righties that splitter came alive. Against lefties, it was only a 13% usage, which meant that the sweeper and the four-seamer had to do everything against left-handers, which doesn't surprise anyone really. Like, that's the traditional approach against lefties, but both of those were actually high ICR marks, 39% on the four-seamer and 42 on the sweeper, which isn't quite what you want. Also, Imanaga's four-seamer that we've talked a lot about over the days did not hit a 10% swing strike rate against lefties or righties. So there is some concern with it. He gets a ton of strikes with them. It's what is the foundation of it all. He is a big fly ball guy. And to see the 1.4 home run per nine, when I see that, you're going to get a ton of fly balls and this low swing strike around them, it does mean that this is going to be more variance, I think, moving forward. Not to mention, yes, Imanaga had this amazing stretch to begin the year, but it was such an exception of a run. Mm-hmm. And when I see those kinds of runs really affect everything, not to say that it was a bad season otherwise, it wasn't. It was a very productive one for Imanaga. It does influence us when we see that 2.91 ERA and a 1.02 whip. And if you did forget how good Imanaga was in this stretch, it was something that people were writing papers about. I mean, it was articles left and
articles
right. The actual numbers of the first nine games of Shota Imanaga's 2024 season was a 0.84 ERA and a 0.91 whip in 53 innings. That is absolutely bonkers. And he did have two blow-up games that did really mess us up, but 3.84 ERA, 1.07 whip after that, right? Not to say that that's bad. Like, that's Joe Ryan. And I've actually called Shota Imanaga Joe Ryan a fair amount because of this. That said, I think that's really more of what Imanaga is. And he's not gone from the injury bug too, because there's a constant thing we see with Japanese pitchers coming over in their second season. After the change of workload in 1 year is 173 innings and 29 starts for Imanaga in 2024. We do see that effect happening in the next season. Look at Kodai Senga, for example. So just be aware of that with Imanaga. He does throw loft strikes with a four seam. That's pretty much what this is saying. It's also saying, look, when he faces right-handers, especially without those left-handed numbers that are kind of scary, splitter and four-seamer really hold their own under 40% ICR too. So those are good elements. I think Imanaga is a beneficial pitcher for you. He doesn't walk batters. He gets strikeouts. That's always going to be good. Whip should generally be in his favor. But the home runs are going to be an issue. And I'm curious to see if that 25% strikeout rate does stick again for 2025.
Yeah, we have these tendencies in when we rank or draft players too. Like, Imanaga didn't come out of nowhere, right? Quote unquote. However, he was the far less heralded Japanese pitcher that came over last year behind Yoshinobu Yamamoto. There were some people that were really into Imanaga early on in the season because of your analysis and also Lance Brozdowski's. I had Imanaga on a bunch of teams, benefited from the early season success. Yeah. Then
next to each other. We saw the list. I was like, oh, I felt Imanaga. Oh man, okay.
And so then we start to then rank like, oh, this guy was then in our heads like, well, he came out of nowhere. He was so good. And then we bump up the ranking to try to like course correct for the year before. Yeah. And sometimes like you're not chasing the career year, right? But you're also not chasing the, oh, I missed on that guy. So now I need to be aggressive and rank him even higher this year. If you missed on a guy in the year before, don't let that factor into where you rank him the next year. You should rank him based on what you believe his value is. And so if you're saying, I need to adjust my expectations on how good he is, fine, cool. That makes total sense. But not, oh my God, I was so wrong on him, so I'm going to course correct and make sure that I'm more aggressive than I want to be because I was so, like, right. I was wrong the first time. It's like, just take that into your how you're ranking this time. You're not just going to, you know, you're not like, oh, I was so wrong on a guy and he was terrible, so all of a sudden I'm going to like really just fully avoid or like move him from like, you know, Kevin Gausman, move him from like 7 down to like 80. He was so bad. It's like, no, we readjust how we view the person. We rank them based on those readjustments. And if that still winds up being wrong, then okay, we adjust from there as well.
Exactly.
It's my soapbox. Yep.
I love it.
The last guy on here, a little surprising to me because I think we think of this pitcher as having a disappointing 2024 season. Because of how high he was ranked, and we thought that he was going to take this major leap forward. And it's Grayson Rodriguez.
Yeah.
Grayson Rodriguez finished 91st percentile swinging strike rate, 79th percentile striker, and 90th percentile PLV. We understand that Grayson Rodriguez is an incredibly talented pitcher. He was the top ranked pitching prospect in baseball for a while. He has never been like bad for the Orioles. He maybe hasn't come up and had a Paul Skeens type of debut like some people probably thought he was capable of when he was a pitching prospect. But this shows that the baseline talent of Grayson Rodriguez is still pretty good. And you can make an argument that we haven't actually seen it click for him, but it still very much could.
Yeah, I really want to buy into Grayson Rodriguez. I really do. he throws a lot of strikes with secondary pitches too, right? Four-seamer changeup and curveball are there against left-handers, while the slider gets in there against right-handers. And all of them are above 60% strikes. That's always like a good baseline to have. I don't see that terrifying five in the tens column making them underneath 60%. Everything is above there. Good. So that means that the 8% walk rate of 2023, yeah, that came down to 7%. And that is more believable. The main question really I have for Grayson Rodriguez is how good is he going to be commanding the actual zone and in bat influence? And what I mean by that is the guys who can actually really command these pitches and throw strikes a lot are saying, great, I'm now in a 1-1 count. I'm going to put this changeup in the zone, but it's going to be over here. Cool. Now that it's 1-2, I'm going to put a slider down here, then put a four-seamer there. And not necessarily say like dotted, but in that realm. And something that I watched with Grayson Rodriguez a ton last year is that he just wasn't quite nailing it with his slider and his changeup. Really with all of his secondaries, curveball, you could say as well, where he had to focus on the four-seamer more because guys were either fouling it off or he just in the at-bat wasn't efficient as he wanted to be, right? So the overall, hey, 62% strike rate, fine. This one's a more hittable one or it's fouled off or it's not really in that moment. And it, as you said, just didn't click right for him. And I think that it very well could, especially with Grayson and Rodriguez. I don't know if people realize this. His extension is insane. It is a 97th percentile extension at 96. Hello? That you throw lots of strikes with that kind of extension and at 96, you know, it makes me think that Grayson is messing up by featuring this changeup curve slider when it should be sinker cutter. Kind of like Garrett Crochet, where he's giving guys too much of a velocity change with that extension and should be leaning in on movement at the same velocity with that extension to just say, look, it's three different pitches of, you don't know which direction it's going to go and you're going to just have weak contact or just miss it. It's kind of wild to me because of the four-seamer otherwise, it's average flatness. I mean, slightly above average, 1.1, I adjust the VAA as opposed to like 0.8 or something. And it's 14 and a half mm-hmm. IVP, which is bad. It's not, but Garrett Crochet's isn't good either. The reason that his is as effective as it is that he's able to mix it in with a cutter and the sinker that they can't tell the difference. And he spots that cutter really well off of it. So I kind of wonder if that is the answer for Grayson Rodriguez. It's not to say that the changeup is a bad offering. It's just, he doesn't quite spot it well and it's too slow, 83 miles per hour. So when you're changing as a hitter, you can actually do that little thing of like slowing down the bat more and then getting time to really find the location, right? When location is different, you want time to help. Sometimes it's so good you can't even tell and you're just sold out and that's that. But that to me isn't quite the solution. And the slider isn't one of these hard 90, 89, 90 mile per hour sliders. It's 85, 86. The curveball's 81. So the velocity gap between these, you can have one pitch like that, but think if everything is like that,
right?
It kind of helps saying either fastball, off speed, and that's that. Whether you know it's a Garrett Crochet where it's just you can't make that adjustment on the fly. I think he's so close. I really do. There was a cutter that was thrown 3% of the time, but that was 85 miles per hour, so I'm not even going to include that. I think Grayson Rodriguez has that foundation and can be there, and he can throw strikes. It's just not quite the right ones at the moment for him to really take off.
Can I ask, do you trust the Orioles to make those adjustments? I mean, if we think of like their pitching development, right?
I know.
I mean, sure, Kyle Bradish. I believe he was drafted. I need to check. I believe Bradish was drafted by the Orioles and developed in the minor leagues by the Orioles. And he turned into, he was actually drafted by the Angels. however, he's been with the Orioles since 2021. Okay. So, you know, whatever. Bradish, I guess, is a success story for them, even though he got hurt. Grayson Rodriguez is obviously a totally solid starting pitcher. So it's not like they quote unquote failed to develop him. But I mean, Cade Povich wasn't entirely impressive. Years ago, everybody was like, ooh, Bruce Zimmerman is like a crafty lefty. Nothing ever kind of happened there. Sure. I can't really think of like the other Orioles starting pitcher who's really come up and, you know, made a major, major impact. I just wonder if the Orioles are the team that can get that next level out of Grayson Rodriguez.
Just so you know, I was thinking this was right, especially when you said 2021, and it is. The Kyle Brash deal was Dylan Bundy to the Angels.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Zach Peake, Kyle Branovich as well, and Isaac Madison or Mattson in that deal. It's Kyle Brash is the only one we know now, at least I do. Maybe not. You never know. You never know also in the offseason now who's talking to who, who's doing what. Right. That's my two cents. I think that Grayson Rodriguez needs something hard to pair off with a four-seamer. Maybe not. Maybe it's just execute those sliders and curveballs and changeups more. The good news is that his foundation's so good with a 7.3 extension, which is just amazing. And a fastball at 96. And you can throw strikes. Like that itself opens the door for just something else to work with that effectively. And that gives me hope that Grayson Rodriguez can really get out of this little funk that he's in. The 124 whip is an 8.4 hit per nine. And generally when we talk about striker, we think of guys that actually would have good hit suppression. 40% ICR is 34th percentile. He's really doing this from the strike rates that are just so high. That's where his striker is higher than others. I think it's there. I think it's possible. And I'm very curious to see where he goes in drafts this year, because there is a situation where I don't think that Grayson Rodriguez should overall hurt you. Right? 386 ERA, 124 whip actually did hurt you in your 12-teamers last year, because that brought you down in both ERA and whip to where you want to be at the end of the year. But it's still that strikeout rate's there, the 7% walk rate. Like, foundation is here. I don't think he's a Andrew Heaney type of just allowing like a 2 home run per nine to make that K-minus walk rate actually look bad in the end.
Yeah, and I think there's a little bit of prospect fatigue in a sense that could impact his draft stock of like, we've waited for the ascension for a couple of years and the ascension hasn't happened. And so I think people kind of like, maybe this is who he is. And so I don't think he's going to like plummet in drafts, but I think if you are a believer that there's another level, you might be able to get him without having to pay a huge cost, because I think people may have just settled into believing this is the version of Grayson Rodriguez we're going to get. And so I think there'll be some drafts out there where you could get him at a pretty good level, a pretty good cost.
Absolutely.
Including, I think that you can get some of these other pitchers at a pretty good cost. Some of the guys we get as we expand the leaderboard again, and we'll do that after this break. So if we expand the leaderboard to pitchers who finished in the top third, so the top 33%, in all of these categories, again, swinging strike rate, striker, and PLV. We got a couple of other names that don't surprise us. We talked about Sonny Gray and how good Sonny Gray was last year. Him being in the top third in these categories is not overly surprising. There are 25 starters here that qualified. So you're kind of saying Sonny Gray pitched like a top 25 starting pitcher. Not a shocking statement. George Kirby's in there. Also does not surprise us. We know how good George Kirby is. Cole Reagans is in there.
What? No way.
Cole Reagans is the greatest. Pablo Lopez is in there, which doesn't surprise us, because even though Pablo Lopez didn't have the season many of us thought, suggesting Pablo Lopez is a top 25 starting pitcher is not a shocking statement. Right.
He just barely missed the top 25%, by the way. 74.5 percentile in PLV. Yeah. So close.
He could have been on that last one. Another guy that doesn't surprise me, Luis Castillo, right? Even though Luis Castillo had a quote down year. Again, if you're putting Luis Castillo within the top 25 starting pitchers, I don't think anybody is really pushing back on that. Right. So the fact that he finished in the top third of all of these things is not a huge surprise. Some other guys were, maybe it's not a surprise, but you know, they're two guys that for me have kind of operated on the fringe, are Tanner Bibee and Ryan Pepiot, who are two guys that I think, like, if we were ranking, you know, you and I probably wouldn't have them right now within the top 25, but they're probably not too far away from the top 25. And we both believe that in terms of like their talent, there's certainly a narrative where they put together a top 20, top 25 season based on their ability. And so these are two guys that I thought were interesting on this list, you know, finishing in the top third in all of these stats.
Yes. Oh, man. I just actually did the podcast for the Plus Pitch podcast. I'm going through every single rotation. And if you guys didn't see it on the site, PL Pro users get full access to the Rays rotation blurbs I'm going to be using for the top 400. It's just early access. It's going to be free for everybody in about a month. But yeah, if you want to get PL Pro, there's actually a lifetime open right now. So we reopened lifetime subscriptions. Go check that out, of course, at pitchless.com/lifetime. But Ryan Pepio, I love him. And I don't know if I can draft him, but I want to so badly. I have a whole theory about you need to have four pitchers that you want to start every single time they start and you don't think about it for the year. I know it sounds like such a big ask, but it really isn't. There are a lot of guys that are not necessarily SP1s that you want to start for the entire year, but you expect them to start and to do well for your team. Ryan Pepio, I want to say, is one of those. However, there is the potential of being that hipster, the one that is going to allow too many home runs or too many games where the command of the secondaries, that is a slider and the changeup, just not good enough, and he falls to the wayside. It also has the problem of going to George Steinbrenner Field for half the games now, which are, which is just bad for all Rays pitchers. It just is. You're going to have more home runs allowed there. You're going to have also less induced vertical break, as you had with Ryan Pepio's four-seamer at 18.5 IVB last year. Now, if you want to say that, okay, half those games were in the trop, and that gives you a plus 1.5, that means you can subtract minus 75 if you want from that. So it's like 17.5 to 18 IVB, which is still fantastic with a flat arm angle and good extension and at 96. It's a really good fastball. And that's really the push for this this leaderboard for Ryan Pepio. It is a fastball that he gets strikes with near 70% against right-handers. And then against left-handers, it drops down to 62. But then the changeup and the slider are both there, 63% for the changeup and 71% for the slider. The concern I have is that the changeup and slider just aren't quite there yet. They were not efficient pitches in two strike counts last year. Massive regression should come for both of them. That is, we're talking like 16, 17% strikeout rates when it should be like 23, 25 or so on these pitches, especially slider or righty. What's going on? Changeups to lefties, we're at 17%. Come on. So that is good, but it's going to be worse given the situation. Is he really going to take that step forward in command to be able to utilize all this stuff at the same time? I want to love Ryan Pepio. I feel I'm just going to do it anyway as my SP4, even though I really want him as my SP5. It really depends on where he's going in drafts. If it's the 14th round, I'm taking it all day for Ryan Pepio. And also, there are going to be some problems here and there. But if you're looking for that guy that can actually shoot up to be a top 15, top 20 starter out of nowhere, it could be Pepio. Just wins also. I got to throw that in there. Wins, Rays, we don't really know right now. Could be kind of bad. So
yes,
that's Ryan Pepio in a nutshell.
This is me in a nutshell. This, you know, sorry, think about that that awesome power skit. But yeah, I'm a fan. I think, you know, you and I kind of had Pepio and Boz similarly ranked, and I think we're both kind of like in our low 30s, I believe, with the rankings on those guys. So yeah, I like Pepio. I'm not opposed to drafting him. I think some of the guys on the sheet are a little bit, or on this leaderboard, are a little bit safer. And there's an argument to be made that Bibee is a little bit safer. Ceiling might not be as high, but, you know, pretty solid pitcher on a good team. And we have seen some flashes of, you know, another level of performance from him.
Yeah, Pepio is someone that I don't think I'm going to quite understand for a while, and I think that's it. The cutter against right-handers was a big deal this year. There's a good actual Pitching Ninja video of him showing how he throws it, which is kind of strange. It looks like it's a two-seamer, essentially, but just how he throws it makes it a cutter. 21% swing strike rate against righties with a 66% strike rate with a 36% ICR. That was the secret to the season, really, for him with that. And that same cutter against lefties, guess what? Same stuff with a 26% ICR. The four-seamer is still a big question to me. 44% usage and 47% ICR against lefties. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a good fastball. I think it's pretty mediocre, 43% ICR against right-handers with a high strike rate near 70%. That, to me, is the weak point of Bybee. He throws a lot of strikes. Everything is above a 65% strike rate against right-handers. That is insane to me. You have the same thing, really, against left-handers. Actually, a small dip in four-seamers at 64%. Oh, no. But yeah, he pumps strikes. And I think the four-seamer is too hittable, which is why I'm always a little tepid on it. Near 8 hit per 9 last year, but the walk rate's going to be down. The, you know, just 6%, 26% K rate. I might be underrating Bybee just for the fact that he throws enough strikes, so the whip will be generally good. The striker rate is there because of that efficiency with that cutter and slider against both right-handers and left-handers, and the changeup as well, around 25% put-away rate against both right-handers and left-handers. So he has those options. It's just about how much is the four-seamer going to hurt him or not, and he's been able to maneuver around it thus far. I find it being a safe play, as you're talking about, a Holly, who I don't ever think is going to become a 30% strikeout rate guy. I think the 26 is probably like the cap that we saw last year. But we're not going to really see that 2.5 ERA season. We're not going to see that one whip season either. He's just going to be like, hey, look, here's my SP2, SP3 that is solid throughout the year. You're going to get some wins. You're going to get volume. Like, you should be happy with Bybee. But I do think there is a floor we haven't seen. And I'm going to imagine that we're not going to see it.
Yeah, I think my pushback on Bybee was always like, everybody was like, oh, well, he is the potential fantasy ace. I mean, I was on a PitchCon panel last year where somebody said Bybee is a dark horse for AL Cy Young. And I was just like, no, like, I just don't believe he's that guy. And so in my head, I was like down on Bybee because I was pushing back on the ceiling that people thought. And I just think I've course corrected in my head of like, I'm not down on Bybee. I think Bybee's a rock solid SP2, SP3, probably even like, you know, whatever in your SP2 range. I don't think there's the ceiling that you mentioned, but that doesn't mean I'm down on him. I just like maybe don't think the ceiling is as high, but I'm totally happy with him.
Who would you rather have? Bybee or Castillo?
I'd rather have Castillo. I think I'm not ready to give up on the guy that I ranked as like the sixth starting pitcher overall last year. And I don't, to be clear, like, I think I have him like 17th this year. Like, I'm not saying Castillo is a top 10 pitcher anymore. However, I think we've seen enough years of consistent production from him that I think they both are kind of like safe floor guys who, including Castillo, no longer has, in my view, that like top 5, 6, 7, 8 pitcher in fantasy type of ceiling that I thought that he maybe still did. But I think Castillo is a rock solid pitcher where there will be some rough stretches at the beginning of the season because that's who he's always been. And you'll look up at the end of the year and you'll get solid stats across the board on a team that's going to win a decent amount of games and give him a good shot at wins. And he goes deep enough into games that he pitches to a decent amount of wins often in his career. And so I just trust what we're getting from Castillo enough still in his career. I don't think the cliff is there yet. I think it's just like maybe he's on the beginning of a small slope downward.
Sure. Yeah, I think I might be taking Bybee. I'm surprised to say that, but I think it's just because, I mean, I do like the cutter a lot for Bybee. It really was a massive change for him and allowed the slider to be a little bit better too. I mean, context is good too. They're good for both of them, really. Obviously, pitching in Seattle is incredible. But it does seem that Bybee has hit somewhat of a plateau, somewhat. And I trust if someone's going to repeat what they did last year, it would be Bybee. While there's a larger case to be made of Castillo going downward as opposed to upward. And if I had to say someone that might be difficult to assess in June, I think it'd be harder to assess Castillo than Bybee. So, I mean, I think I have Bybee right at the start of my Holly tier, like the Justin Steele, Framber Valdez, Tanner Bybee section. You know, that's really where I'm going to be putting him.
Fair. That's interesting. I mean, I'll dive back in as we get closer with like the Castillo stuff. I just don't think I'm ready to write him off so much.
Yeah, sure.
We're gonna go with two more groupings. I want to address the two pitchers at the bottom of this list separately at the end. Sure. So there are just some guys that I'll lump together here, just if you have any observations, guys who put together strong stretches of 2024, I think at different times in the year. So you're going to look at some of them and immediately think like one is better than the other. But we got Yusei Kikuchi on here. Again, finished in the top third in both swinging strike rate and striker and PLV. You've got Nick Pivetta on here, still a free agent. I don't know where he's going to land. And you've got Cutter Crawford. Obviously, we've talked about these guys at length. I think you and I both probably feel like Crawford is the third guy on this list because he had a really good start to the year, but doesn't have that kind of like pitch to go to the home run, you know, the fly ball issue. The home run issues are a concern. Right now, he might be pushed out of the Red Sox rotation with Giolito back and the other additions they've made. So, you know, Crawford is kind of third there, but this has obviously his presence on this list shows us, you know, what we saw in the first half of the year might not be a total fluke. It might not be that level, but he possesses that level. He owns those skills. They just might not show up consistently. And then Kikuchi and Pivetta are both guys, like, they're a reason that teams keep giving them shots. They're a reason that fantasy managers wanted them, you know, year in, year out. It's like you squint and you see what the upside is. It's just rarely there for a full season. But their presence on this list lets us know that like those skills are there.
Yeah. It should be no surprise that a lot of these guys on here are home run pitchers, because ICR isn't saying if it's a difference between a burner or a barrel sweet spot home run, right? So those that throw a lot of strikes, if they get really burned by home runs, well, there you go. That's why it's a little shocking there. And it is a little surprising to see that three of the last four seasons have come with at least a 26% strikeout rate for Nick Pivetta. His 6% walk rate last year is pretty cool, but the homer per nine, 1.73 and 1.45 previously. And between Cutter Crawford and Pivetta, I would say that Cutter Crawford has a better home run situation than Pivetta. And it's a major thing about the four-seamer and sweeper. With Nick Pivetta, the four seamer comes out at a certain angle and the sweeper's lower. And you can actually see this in the numbers of this. The ICR is over 50% on Pivetta's four seamer. It goes essentially just two pitch here, four seamer sweeper. While the sweeper is more effective against righties, it gets that four seamer gets crushed a lot more. However, against lefties, he goes with a curveball and that curveball comes out at much closer to the same release point as the four seamer. Thus, the four-seamer performs better as a much lower ICR, under 40%. That's okay. I think that's always going to be a problem for Nick Pivetta, especially against right-handers, which is the more popular way to hit at the plate. So you're going to see more of those guys, and that's not going to go away. Well, with Cutter Crawford, I think there are things to do to make him a little bit better. I think the improved cutter of his namesake is a big deal for him. And it might make him more of a well-rounded pitcher moving forward. He does have a larger arsenal with a four-seamer, sweeper, splitter, curveball in there as well. We saw him make a leap in IVB last year out of nowhere, too. I think there's a little bit more potential in a sustainable plateau that we like with Cutter Crawford. It isn't as clear of a situation, though, in Red Sox County. We don't know how often he's going to start, how long he's going to be able to go. He did just go 183 innings in 33 starts, though. And you got to think that the Red Sox are going to be like, yes, even with all these question marks and everything, like, we can't really just let that go by the wayside. 4.36 ERA, yes, but 1.12 whip. It is like that Joe Ryan situation with that 1.67 homer per nine for Cutter Crawford last year. So I think if I had to choose between both of them, if Cutter Crawford's not starting, I drop him. If he is starting, right, I prefer that over Pivetta. If you're making this pick now and you don't have an option really to drop and get someone else, it's Pivetta, wherever he lands. But I think I trust Cutter Crawford a little bit more on a per start basis.
I think obviously the Pivetta question is, you know, heavily influenced by where does he go.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we'll see where he goes. I mean, I can't think of a contender that really needs him other than, like, you know, Baltimore, and Baltimore's filled that rotation. So I don't know where Nick Pivetta goes. I mean, I guess we'll have to see. I mean, you know, the Mets seem content with what they've got. You know, Pivetta
is probably an upside
on, like, you know, some of those other guys that are in there. So we'll see. I'm curious to see where Pivetta winds up. And then we'll end with these last two guys. Spencer Arrighetti made this list. Maybe not a surprise. 71st percentile swinging strike rate, 69th percentile striker, 68th percentile PLV. So again, in the top third in all of these, not blowing the doors off of any of these categories, but squeaking in the top third in all of them, which maybe kind of is like a nice, it makes sense to talk about Arrighetti that way, where it's like, yeah, he's not blowing the doors off of any of these stats where you're like, oh my God, this that he does is ridiculous, but he does a lot of things pretty well. And when you have a deep arsenal of pitches and you do a lot of things pretty well, that can make you a valuable starting pitcher. And maybe that's how we need to think about Arrighetti, is like, yeah, he's not Skeens. He's not Jared Jones. He's not, you know, even like a Cade Horton, like a pitcher where they have like moments where you're just like, holy cow, when you watch them. But he's a pretty strong pitcher overall on a good team. And so there's some value there for Arrighetti.
Oh, man. Arrighetti, the Pasta Pirate. I really think there's something more here, except that the command just gives me the heebie-jeebies. And Nick, what are you talking about? He has all these strikes, and this is why he's on this list. He throws all these strikes. Yeah, he kind of fills up the zone, and watching him a lot, some days it's just a cool, I know where my curveball is going and my cutter is going there, and great. But his four-seamer to me needs to be the pitch that is more the foundation, because it is a very flat four-seamer. 1.6 height-adjusted VAA is fantastic. That would be the 97th percentile four-seamer among starting pitchers, right? So good. 7.2 feet of extension also at 94. Man, that should absolutely demolish up in the zone. And unfortunately, against right-handers, 17th percentile high lock. He's trying to, but he gets it so much down the middle. YM lock, that is middle height, 85th percentile. That is the thing that bothers me the most about Arrighetti, is that it feels like right now he's just kind of zooming it in there, and he has this filthy stuff to play off of that. The cutter, the curveball, the sweeper, changeup, he can do those things, but he's not pitching to his strength yet. He needs to actually locate these things appropriately. However, if he does, I mean, he's got a really good arsenal. That cutter does really, really well against both righties and lefties, sub 38% ICR rate against lefties. That curveball as well avoids bats effectively. Needs to get a little more strikes on that against lefties, just for what it's worth. But it's one of those things where Arrighetti has the weapons. He just needs to get that extra layer of polish, and he's new. 28 games started last year, right? 145 innings pitched, much more than we thought we would get from him. And it didn't go great all the time. It was really good for a bit. Then he had that ridiculous Cincinnati Reds game. Thank you, Yahoo, for changing that to an error and making those unearned runs. You guys know what I'm talking about if you know. But Arrighetti, good news. We'll get more time in Houston. Is he going to become more consistent with locating his four-seamer than playing off of that? I don't know. I'm willing to take the chance here. I think that you're going to get a pitcher who takes a step forward in his second season, has a good foundation for this, and yes, could very well be a hipster, but I want to say he's actually one step slightly higher than that, as he showed it for a good while last year, second half of the year got there, has enough weapons and throws enough strikes to give himself a good enough chance to be more helpful than harmful in your season ahead. So I'm in on Spencer Arrighetti.
Yeah, I've become more in. I was interested in him as a prospect because he actually did put up like decent swing strike rates in the minor leagues. It didn't seem like it was going to carry over because obviously there's a jump in the quality of offensive production. But yeah, I am in on Spencer Arrighetti as well. Obviously not as high as I am on some of the guys on this list, but that makes some sense because some of these guys are the top tier pitchers in baseball, including the last pitcher, who should be no surprise on this leaderboard because consistently one of the best pitchers in all of baseball. No, I was shocked to see Reed Detmers Reed Detmers, ladies and gentlemen. 85th percentile swinging strike rate, 75th percentile striker, 67th percentile PLV. Yeah, listen, Reed Detmers. There were some stretches where it looks good. There's some stretches where it totally falls apart. Yeah. The Angels haven't really decided on like a pitch mix for him, or he hasn't decided on it. They kept him down in the minors for so long last year. There's so many things going on here. I think he really is a starting pitcher who needs a fresh start. But I was surprised he was on here, and I was surprised it's an 85th percentile swinging strike rate, because I feel like he doesn't miss bats in the way that he should miss bats.
Yeah.
His presence on here is obviously a surprise. I am not going to draft Reed Detmers among my top 25 starting pitchers just because he makes this leaderboard. But I think it's fair to at least not fully give up on him. You know, we need to make sure that he gets a rotation spot coming out of spring. And maybe you're not taking him in 12 team leagues. Or if you do, he's one of your last picks where you're like, you know, he looks good this spring. I'll take a shot on and see if it finally clicks. He made the leaderboard, and I'm curious what your reaction was to knowing that he made the leaderboard.
Yeah. Hey, Reed Detmers. It's good to see you. You can actually see him. He's up there. If you're watching on YouTube right now, the no-hitter bobblehead behind me. And Reed Detmers is someone who lives and dies by his slider. What was really exciting, actually, the very beginning of the year last year was that he had suddenly extrovert on his four-seamer. It was a harder one. It was better. And then it went away. And then the slider feel went away. And what happens every single time is that it goes away. There's no one there with the Angels to help him fix it. And then he came back and had a moment where the slider was good. And then it was horrible at the end. And this is the life of Reed Detmers to me. Plenty of home runs. It's not a four-seamer that says, look, you can't hit this. It doesn't really suggest that, yes, 17 inches of vert last year, but 6 feet of extension. On the steeper side, height adjusted VA at 0.7. It's 41th percentile, 93-94. And you can't do it with just that vert. That's not good enough for it. So he needs to get the slider that's buried down and in to right-handers. And sometimes it really does that and it's great. And the other times it just floats up there. And then the changeup. And I think the changeup is the most intriguing one to me because that has the most potential. You're a lefty. And what we've seen are lefties having success with good changeups, especially against right-handers. It's the way that you face them, your most common enemy. Just like for right-handers, you got to have a good slider, right? Well, that pitch sometimes was there, especially early in the season. It was really nice him surprising with one when he had this really good four-seamer off. Some bam, there's a changeup third time through the lineup. Oh my gosh, that was so cool. Not consistent enough at all. You could see how it all would work, but you can't believe it will. And I think it's very much of a hipster situation. Hey, you can do some pitchers stifling the entire roster. You will be lucky to get the good ones and get out. Good luck trying to figure out when it's going to be. I'm not going to go through this. I'm going to love him in spring training. Does it every year. Amazing slider from Reed Detmers. Oh my God, it's back. Look at all these things he's doing. Maybe I'll draft him for two starts and then get rid of him. I get it.
But I'm not, yes, another guy where I'm not maybe jumping in like I had in the past where I was like, all right, it didn't work this year. It's going to work again. Listen, he's only 25 years old. He's going to pitch basically this whole year at 25. He turns 26 in July. You know, he's still relatively young in that respect, in terms of like, it wouldn't surprise for that pedigree or that, you know, the innate talent we know he has to finally click. Again, I'm not gonna let a couple good starts in spring training, you know, vault him up my rankings to the point where it's like I'm drafting him super high. Am I open to taking Reed Detmers with one of my final picks in a draft and, you know, seeing how the first couple starts go? Sure. Am I gonna do that blind? No, I do need to see some changes in spring training. I need to know he has a rotation spot. It's just nice. We're keeping his name in the discourse. Reed Detmers, people. He didn't vanish. He's still around. And looking at the Angels rotation right now, I would be shocked if he didn't start spring training in the rotation. It's Kikuchi, and Kyle Hendricks and Tyler Anderson, who I guess are kind of like locked into spots because of recent contracts and whatever, just a couple of 35 and 34 year old starters leading this rotation. Then you've got Jose Soriano and Reed Detmers. And I think that's kind of it, unless you believe that Jake Kahanowitz or Caden Dana or Sam Aldagiri are pushing out Reed Detmers. And is that a possibility? I mean, like, I guess if Caden Dana like has a amazing spring training,
yeah, I'm curious,
I just
about
don't
Dana,
really just see it.
If he becomes like that Toby type that they need, it's possible. Kahanowitz, I think, is such an interesting guy with a sinker and a good command of it. And it's just a rarity to see that right now. I'm curious.
The big one would be, it's not for next year though, but George Klassen, the pitching prospect from the Phillies, absolutely. Except that they moved him to double A after he was traded and he was not that good in double A. And I was,
he needs more time than
the Angels got.
The stuff is there and everything. You just need more time.
We don't have more time today. That's going to do it for this episode of On the Corner. We'll be back for more discussions on starting pitchers as we get through it, and maybe we can make this leaderboard available for anybody if you want to. We'll talk to Kyle. Maybe it's a PL Pro thing. We'll get
it. Yeah, we'll paste it. We'll look at it. Send it to everybody inside of the Discord. So yes, go check it out there.
But I hope everybody enjoys the rest of their Monday. Their Monday off, and enjoy this nice cold week in New York City we've got coming up. I am Eric Smolsky, the Pelican.
I'm Nick Pollock, the Lion.
And I'm going to go help wrangle my toddler who didn't want to nap the whole time we were on this podcast.